The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
All right.
It's week three of the NFL.
The way, first time back with quarterback trivia. Thanks.
It was only week one, right?
Yeah.
Pete's doing a victory lap.
He loved it. He's like, oh, that guy calls himself a historian. I just crapped all over him.
Yo. Yeah, baby. Look who it is. It's Paul D. Burmeister, a.k.a. Mr. Johnny Quarterback Trivia over there. Yes, we will be having quarterback trivia once again after at the end of this podcast. But and I'm still mad at Pete. You know, of course, Pete had to like get really embarrass me on my quarterback questions. But I should have got some of those. There's no doubt. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Good to see you with that new background. I've got a new one here as well. We're each in a little different spots than we were this summer when we were doing it. But as for the quarterback trivia, you know, that was Pete stumping you last week, and this is my deal now this week. We're going to kind of go back and forth and collaborate, but if there's someone to blame after this one, it's me.
Okay, fine. That makes it easy. Good. At least I can just blame you over the right here live podcast and just tell you what a jerk you are to your face. That's easy. That's even better. Definitely. What's up, man? I like the Iowa Hawkeyes helmet behind
yes.
there.
There we go.
Look
yeah.
at you. With the 1984 yes. Dan Marino face mask on there. Look at you.
About a decade later, but I don't know if it was the same for you. I think you were early 2000s there in Texas. But every now and then I'll pick up my helmet, and we just moved. So I took it out of a box and put it up here. It may as well have been a 1963 helmet instead of 1993. Have you checked out the old technology with these?
It's terrible. Right? Terrible. Yeah. And how heavy it is compared to the new helmets
gosh.
They have now? I know. It's not the same.
No, it's just ridiculous. And before we get into football, I want to say RIP to Eddie Van Halen, one of the all-time greats of my generation. I think I'm officially 10 years or 9 years older than you. Were you a Van Halen guy back in the day?
I wasn't really a Van Halen guy, but like they were a huge part of my childhood just because they like to what you're saying, they were just very popular. I would say Van Halen was one of the first rock bands I ever knew of, heard of, you know, growing up there in the mid to late 80s when I started to listen to music every now and then. No, it wasn't exactly my type of music, but definite RIP to a legend. Yeah, I mean, that was sad. And I forgot, you had texted that yesterday, and I forgot to kind of read up about it and all that yesterday. So my bad there.
Well, here's the Cliff's Notes. I mean, Van Halen really walked that line between hard rock, top 40, maybe a hair band, but they stuck around for about 20 years. And there was not a bigger rock star in the 80s. Maybe John Bon Jovi, but nobody made it look cooler or made it sound better than Eddie Van Halen. He was as big as it got. He was awesome. No matter who the front man was,
You're right.
The guy. So RIP to one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, RIP to him, definitely. And yeah, it is. It's, you know, what's getting crazy is we're getting old to where people we used to grow up and see are starting to die off, and that's freaking scary. I don't know what's going on here.
I know it is, and I don't know how I whiled away more time the last 24 hours with the quarterback trivia trying to stump you or listening to old Van Halen. I'm going to say it was about a tie, but it was a good 24 hours either way. So football, a lot of good football to talk about from week four. Not a bigger headline, not a more anticipated game than New England, Kansas City. We're going to hit both sides of this one now that we've had a couple days to let it marinate. Let's start with Bill Belichick and the Patriots defense against Patrick Mahomes. and the Chiefs offense. And there are a number of ways to consider this one, Chris. I think the most important part of it, three times the Chiefs have not scored a first half touchdown in a Patrick Mahomes start, all three times against the Patriots. I want to get a really good understanding of what they did, number one, and then in a few moments, can it be duplicated by other teams? But let's begin with that number one. What did the Patriots do specifically to make the Chiefs look so much lesser than?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, you don't need to be a brain surgeon. They have the personnel to match up on the other side, right? That's the first thing they have. They probably know team in football that better matches up with Andy Reid, Mahomes, and the weapons they have than the New England Patriots. They're built to stop the high-flying offenses that want to throw the ball and do that because they have three shutdown man-to-man corners right off the bat. When you just talk about J.C. Jackson, Gilmore, we know how good he is, a defensive player of the year last year, and then Jonathan Jones, the nickelback, let alone really good safety play, and then some other DBs that they bring in to match up with certain guys in certain situations and things like that. So that's the first thing I would say. They're special that way. And, you know, Paul, you hear me talk about sometimes like really good zone teams, right? That it just seems like the coach knows how to make everybody drop into the zone where the offense is trying to attack. Well, Belichick's that way, but does it through man. And what I mean by that is, you know, they're very big into breaking teams down, route recognition, but instead of doing it through zone and seeing the whole picture, you know, they'll teach Stephon Gilmore, hey, you're man-to-man on Tyreek Hill, but if you see the slot receiver inside you do this, you can expect that your guy will do this off of it. So it's a little bit of like route reading, but man-to-man style. And, you know, every offense has its tendencies, and no defense is better than breaking down tendencies than Belichick, to where to the point you see certain plays where the DBs break at the same time the wide receivers break because they've been drilled all week. Hey, you saw the slot receiver go across, then that outside receiver is probably going to go across and follow him too, or run an in cut or something like that. So I think that's where it starts, let alone some of the other nuances that they're very special at to frustrate a guy like Patrick Mahomes or take away some of the things you want to do in the pass offense.
You mentioned tendencies, and that goes both ways. And one of the questions I had when I was watching that game and really thinking about it the last couple of days, I'm sure Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid went back and watched those two previous games that I mentioned where they also didn't score in the first half against the Patriots defense. Do they do the same thing each time, or are they changing up these difficult looks they give them with each game?
Well, and you mean by the Patriots, are they doing the same thing every time?
Yeah, because I'm sure that they went to school on the last two times that shut them down as well. So was it the same presentation and they just did it well again, or did they change it up?
No, it's the same presentation for the most part. A few changes here and there, but the problem is you can't get a feel for when they're going to do it, right? That's the big thing. So you go, oh, they play this exotic coverage and do this, you know, let's say they play man-to-man. They'll play man-to-man across the board, and then they'll have three rushers. And it'll make it look like five rushers, right? They'll have five guys, and you're thinking, oh, they're going to bring a five-man pressure. But all of a sudden, only three men rush, and then two drop out. And while they're playing man, they'll have two guys underneath ready for, like, picks or crosses, right, to try to rub people, which people do. Well, New England, they know that's the weakness of man-to-man coverage. So this is Bill Belichick. He's not going to let his number one weakness of that defensive call just get exposed. So he throws the curveball out there. I'm going to have two guys drop out. So even if they do pick the two man-to-man guys, I'll have a guy there waiting for each crosser, and Mahomes won't be able to throw it there anyways. That's where I think it's unique, and it's hard to really get a gauge for when they're going to do it or when they're going to call it. But there needs to be more variations and things thrown at New England from Kansas City. Yes, I still look at it and go, it's a very similar game plan to how I've seen them attack him the last few times. And there's not enough curveballs or self-scouting thyself to go, wait, we do this, we do this, we do this. We need to do something else. And to your point, and just because I know this is going to come up, but like Travis Kelce had two big corner routes in the game, right? Both of them were like, I'm going to run the deep cross. I'm putting the brakes on and now I'm going to break out. And New England, I think in those formations, was going, hey, when they get in this formation and do this, Kelce's going to cross and then they're going to send another deep crosser the other way. Well, that was Kansas City's really one of their best wrinkles they had in the game to go, they'll be expecting the cross and play the cross, so we'll stop and come back out. And that led to some big plays, the two biggest pass plays, I think, of the night for Mahomes in Kansas City.
What would you like to see Kansas City do better for the next time? And did they do a little bit of that in the second half because they weren't themselves so much, but they were good enough to win?
Yeah, first off, they need to just tinker around with ideas against some of those, like the coverage I just explained, man-to-man, two guys drop out or playing zone underneath. Or it's man-to-man on the outside. I'm sure you saw this during the game. Romo kind of pointed it out. It's man-to-man on the outside, and then there's two safeties deep who are kind of just looking for the post or the deep crossers, and they're sitting there because they know, man, it's hard to ask Stephon Gilmore to run on a deep cross or a post all the way across the field with the fastest guy we've maybe ever seen in football. That's not fair. So we need to help him out, and we'll put a safety over there that where, yeah, he's running the cross, and he might have Gilmore beat, but that safety's just sitting there waiting for the cross, 25 yards downfield. And then there's a safety on the other side doing the same thing, waiting for the guy crossing across the other side. So they're going to have to really tinker and be creative to have some plays. And listen, I don't have the plays for you right now. I'd have to sit my butt down and figure this out too, to where they can expose it. And, whether that's using some of these outside receivers as a decoy to take those safeties away, to create a matchup underneath where you feel like, ooh, I like that. But I think that's the big thing. And Paul, the bigger thing too, and like you talk about the big point is which no first half touchdowns and things like that, right? It's confusing Mahomes. That's the number one thing. It's Mahomes, I thought, played a pretty poor football game. And I would say maybe two out of the three worst games I've ever seen him play now were New England last year in the regular season and probably this year in new regular season. I think there's times New England is interesting. They don't care about pass rush. They just don't care. They just want to They just want to rush you to contain you. But go ahead. What do you want to say about it?
There were times where at the snap, as I'm kind of calling play-by-play in my head, I'm like, well, they only rushed three. And then a second later, that third rusher isn't even rushing. He's kind of hanging around the line of scrimmage, spying a little bit. So they really rush two a lot of times, which adds to how well, or I guess how much easier it is to confuse a quarterback when there are eight or nine guys that you got to account for that aren't just coming after you.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. And then in that eight or nine guys you're talking about, they're really coached up for what to look for and what they're going to do. I mean, this is Bill Belichick. He had been a genius this long for nothing. He teaches these guys exactly what to expect in certain formations and things. And you're right. I mean, there's plays where they rush three, rush two, or they're rushing four, but one of them's not really rushing, and he's kind of watching Mahomes or maybe paying attention to the back. Wait, is he going to sneak out of the backfield? So they let none of that get exposed, and they're big into the disruption of wide receivers. So they very rarely let a receiver get a clean release off the ball and just run down the field. And I think you and I have had this conversation too. Defense ends will be next to a slot receiver if they bring a slot receiver in real close. And the defensive end will bang the slot receiver before he rushes. And the beauty of that is if that guy happens to be the first read for Mahomes, he's going to look at it and go, wait, he didn't even get off the line of scrimmage yet. So then Mahomes goes to the second read. And, of course, the second read isn't where he's supposed to because he's gotten there way too quick. And that's the beauty of what he does. And he flustered Mahomes, I think. I really do. I thought Mahomes a few times got off the first read like way too quick to where you go, Kelce's open on the 10-yard out there. Just throw it. Like, throw it in there. But you know, I think between what he was seeing on defense and he has a little bit of the Aaron Rodgers, old Aaron Rodgers, bad habit sometimes where he goes, that guy's open, but it's a tight throw. I'm awesome enough to, I'll buy more time and I'll find an easier throw for a bigger game.
Right.
And New England's a team that you can't do that against because you might not get anybody else open after that first guy was open again.
And that's,
right.
I think that's a money point right there. And just to kind of, we've been talking about this for 10 or 12 minutes, but you always talk about, we have this conversation about how number one, if you want to have success against a really good quarterback, you have to confuse him at the line of scrimmage, make him unsure. And right. Then this layer that we kind of added into it as we moved along, if you can also disrupt the wide receivers, then he's a little more confused. So New England hit both of those things, but this old adage that no matter how good a corner is, no matter how good a safety is, at some point, you can't cover these really good receivers and tight ends for 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds. It seems like New England is actually finding a way, even without a heavy pass rush, to have their DBs hang with these guys. And maybe that's as important as the scheme.
And I think it is. I think you're right. It is as important as the scheme. They have the guys to hang with them. And then those guys know where they have help. Or maybe that extra guy that might be in the middle, you know, everybody's playing man, but there's a guy in the middle kind of just playing zone and reading the quarterback's eyes or waiting for the crosser. So they have great understanding too sometimes when Mahomes breaks the pocket. Oh, wait, you know, the receiver's going to come back to the quarterback. They don't have to like overplay their hand and go, oh, I got to go cut off the receiver. You know, they're smart enough sometimes to go, ooh, well, there's a guy underneath there. He'll stop that. And I'll wait to when that guy stops and realizes, oh, wait, there's somebody there. And now he tries to go back deep. And you're like, oh, man, now the corner's there. So they're just so well taught that way. But I did think Mahomes was off his game, a little impatient, no doubt about it. Missed some throws. I mean, he got lucky. He had two interceptions that just should be slam dunk interceptions that were dropped. Really three. All right. I should say three because the Tony Corrente in the grass sack call was one of the worst calls I've seen in a long, long time. It was a game-changing moment that game's going to be really close if they don't give that bullshit call. Right. I don't know what any other way to say it. So I think those were the big things in the game more than anything. I did think Patrick Mahomes flopped twice on the sidelines, one in which he got a 15-yard penalty. I know that was interesting just to throw that out there. But either way, I think what you and I saw was still another brilliant performance by Belichick, his defense, understanding a scheme and that great talent they have in the secondary really poses some problems for that Chiefs offense and Mahomes.
They have wonderful talent in the secondary. I mean, backing all the way up to the beginning of last year, I remember you saying this is the best defensive backfield in the NFL. But they don't have the market cornered, no pun intended, on excellent defensive backs. Other teams have a good set as well. So let's get to this question. And this one comes from Orion Chuzzlewit via Twitter. He says, the Ravens and Patriots both have defenses which are creative, game plan specific, and play through their elite secondary. Why does Mahomes struggle against one and absolutely torch the other? And this is the second point I really wanted to get to on, can other teams duplicate this? And if they can't, why?
Yeah, they can't. They can't duplicate it. And I'll get to the why in a minute. But here, it's a great question by Orion. Great question. Because you're right. At face value, you'd go, wait, Baltimore's got an amazing secondary too. Why can't they slow them down? You know, one, I don't think anybody's as good at teaching their DBs the tendencies of the offense to go, you know, hey, when the receiver gets in this split, he runs this route and be ready for that. So he's great that way. That's where Belichick, I mean, that's why he's Bill Belichick. But the other thing, too, is Baltimore plays man-to-man in a more aggressive fashion than New England. To where they'll play man-to-man and have no safeties, right? And we're talking New England's the opposite. They'll play man-to-man and bring more DBs in to go, no, we're going to put more safeties or things in the middle of the field. So, yeah, we're playing you man-to-man, but in case you run one of those great man-to-man beaters or something like that, we got guys there for fail-safe, for like, just in case you screw our guy over, we got guys there. The Ravens don't do that. The Ravens are kind of more like, our guys can cover you for 2 or 3 seconds. By the time that 2 or 3 seconds come, our blitz is going to get there and they're going to get to the quarterback. And that's why last week I said, like, the Ravens have to change the way they play the Chiefs. They can't continue to play the way they play because they get gashed. And Belichick, he plays, yeah, aggressive man-to-man, but it's a more conservative version, I guess, is what I'm saying. And because of the versatility of, you know, they play two linemen, and now it's three linebackers, and I don't know which one's rushing or coming out, and they always get their hands on short crossers and slot receivers. You know, that's why it just seems to be more effective than, you know, what the Ravens do.
Before we put this side of the matchup to bed and move over to the other side of the football, I'm thinking about three facets that have to get better for the Chiefs offensively to finally have the kind of success they're used to having against that team. Does it fall most on Patrick Mahomes, on his pass catchers doing a better job of opening up, or on Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy's plan?
Ooh, I think the most would be on Patrick Mahomes. I do. I would probably make him number one. To just go, there was, like I said, I think a handful of plays where I go, if you just stay there in the pocket and are, you know, confident with your read here, the guy's open. There was a few plays of, why are you leaving the pocket? It's totally fine. There's, like you said, there's two or three rushers. You're protected. But for some reason, now you've scrambled to the right. And, you know, New England's smart that way. So now you're bringing all those DBs over there and you can't find a completion or anybody to go to that way. And just the actual Mahomes physical throwing was less than average or less than what we see from him. So I do think he would be the main culprit, not to give Bieniemy and Eric Reid like a free, Andy Reid, sure, a free pass, because I do think they have to tinker with some more ideas as well. And, you know, yeah, they just didn't take advantage of their opportunities. Hey, early on, you make a good drive. You get down there. Mahomes misses the crosser in the end zone to Watkins. He never misses that throw.
Right.
You know, they had a lot of chances to get the game played on their terms, and they didn't do that. It's 6-0. They cause the interception from Hoyer. And then he throws a ball to Sammy Watkins, who's open, and then he fumbles the very next play. So they were real close to really putting the pressure on the Patriots to have to play a game they didn't want to, but they just didn't come through. And yeah, I just don't think they were at their best. And part of me thinks maybe too, the fact that Cam Newton wasn't playing, maybe that, you know, made them relax a little bit.
You walked us right to the other side there. You said Hoyer, you said Cam Newton. So let's put that part. We're done talking about Mahomes having a rare off night. It's a unique time that we get to talk about that. But as for the Patriots offensively against the Chiefs defense, you've had some days to think about Brian Hoyer. And the knee-jerk reaction right away was like, man, that was really, really, really bad. 2 days later, how do you make sense out of what we saw from the Patriots offense?
That was really, really, really bad. You know, that's there's really no other way to shape it. You know, I'm still in shock a little bit to where I just can't believe in the same week we saw a quarterback for Bill Belichick, a quarterback for Nick Mullins do some of the a quarterback for Kyle Shanahan in Nick Mullins do some of the stupidest things I've seen quarterbacks do this season.
Who do you think was worse? Who was worse?
Man, I honestly think probably Mullins was worse, but It wasn't by much. I mean,
I would give him a tiny bit of a pass because of the experience thing.
And yeah.
I think that's what stands out so much about the Patriots offense and Hoyer is that you play him instead of Jared Stidham because he's in his 30s, because he's had over a decade in the league and a lot of time in your system. You're like, okay, he's limited physically, but I can live with that because of some savvy and game management.
Right.
His worst case scenario won't cost us the game.
Right.
And it might with Stidham. And now here we are, his worst case scenario in his 30s cost his team the game.
It was a shocker. I mean, you're right. You thought, okay, yeah, Hoyer, they got a good game plan. They manage this the right way. I mean, if he doesn't do some of the things they do, you know, they're going to have a chance to win the game. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it was the perfect game plan for the situation and stopping the Chiefs. Yeah. make Mahomes confused, then controlled the ball to keep Mahomes on the sideline to where he can't even play or do anything. I mean, that's pretty damn good. When it comes to playing the Chiefs, you do that, you know, you'd think you'd win the football game. We've seen other teams do that and win the football game. But, yeah, just shocking. You know, whether it's, you know, first off, I mean, the horrible sack at the end of the half, the interception, I mean, horrible read, horrible throw to compound the read. The curl route is open, and Keel Harry's open for a 15-yard completion. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get any more open. That combination, pearl, post and a curl. I mean, it's one of the first things that goes in on the New England offense. You know, he messed that up. Then, you know, the strip sack fumble when they're down in field goal. Like, I don't know who he thought he was. And also, Paul, my last thing here that just I think bothered me more than anything, and I think you have my notes, is just I just couldn't believe how he couldn't get off the first read throughout the night. He left a lot of completions and yards on the board because they called a play, and he, unlike Mahomes, this is like the opposite, he looked at the first read and was like, well, he's always open in practice. I'm going to throw it to him. And he wouldn't get off of it to where there was a number of instances where I went, man, this guy's supposed to know this offense. He's been here forever. I know that's why he was excited to make the start. And there was some big plays in the game where I just go, man, if he goes through the second and third read here, he's going to have an easy completion. And the mistakes with that, I think, just were, you know, it's where I'm shocked that Brian Hoyer played like that.
The mental errors, and with the exclamation point being the taking the sack there at the end of the half, that's getting most of the attention. But as I watched from the very beginning, because he missed, I think it was a corner route that in the NFL was wide open, I was reminded, man, these guys are backups because they're not as accurate. It sounds simple, and we take it for granted because all these guys who are really, really good put it on the money all the time.
Right,
but man,
right.
The drop-off in accuracy, even on a night when Mahomes wasn't his best, when you compare the two, was just shocking.
Yeah, it was. Well, yeah, because even when Mahomes is off, right, we still saw four or five throws where he went, that's unbelievable. What a throw. I mean, he threw a corner route to Kelsey. It was great coverage, and he just put it so on the money that he didn't have to slow down, and it became a huge, you know, what was that, a 45-yard gain. You know, just because it was good coverage, but it was just the perfect throw, and he never had to break stride. So you're right about that. There's no doubt. There's plays that are there to be had if you're starting quarterbacks there, where it's not a slam dunk when it comes to, you know, the backups. And I do lose sight of that at times too, because we just look at an NFL and we go, it's the NFL. He should hit him. He's open.
Right.
And you're there's a reason he's a backup. But yeah, that was very disappointing. It really was, and. You know, the way they ran the ball and dominated the line of scrimmage that way. And I don't know if Chris Jones was there, but how could you not wonder how that looks if they have Cam Newton and that extra wrinkle and what he brings? And of course, the better decision maker and thrower that you're talking about to where who knows what happens the next time they play.
Yeah. And who knows about the next time they play? I mean, Cam Newton missed the game, obviously, because he tested positive for COVID. Now we hear today Stephon Gilmore. Also test positive. We'll see how it plays out for the Patriots if and when they play. And unfortunately, it's a story to keep an eye on. But as for the quarterback situation, let's say Cam can't play for another game. Everyone's thinking now, do you play Hoyer again and trot that back out there? Or do you just go with Jared Stidham? Another question from Twitter from @RandyDarsh350. You were selling the Pats love Stidham thing early this year, so why did they start Hoyer? What went wrong with Stidham?
Yeah, it's a good question. Listen, I'm in the same boat to go, I don't know why he didn't start last week either. You know, I'll find out the answer to let you know maybe in next week's pod or something. But I'll tell you what I do know. First off, they were going into the season with Jared Stidham as their starting quarterback. There is no doubt about that. I could show you text messages. I'm telling you, he was going to be the damn starter. Then the Cam Newton thing arose. And they started to go, ooh, this makes sense. And what? We're only going to have to pay you. What? Okay, shit, we'll take you then. I mean, that's really kind of how it fell into their lap. Now, Stidham got hurt during training camp. And there was a period of time where I know he didn't get to practice. And then even when he was going out to practice, he couldn't do everything at practice. He was kind of managing the injury. And I would think that's ultimately what led to him not playing. Then, like, to what you said, I think you encompassed it perfect. You know, okay, he hasn't been able to practice. He's an inexperienced young starter as is. And, okay, we know what we're going to get from Hoyer. And, of course, they didn't get that. But I think that was probably their logic here. But back to your original question, I would be shocked. They got to go with Jarrett Stidham. I mean, right? The same reason I would say that 49ers got to go with C.J. Beathard, because that game film is going to be so egregiously bad that the coaches are going to be like, whoa, we can't play him again. And then the players that watch that film, too, are all going to go, what? We're starting Brian Hoyer again? I mean, it's almost going to give your team, like, no belief going into a week or questions. And that's where I think it'll be Jarrett Stidham all the way if Cam Newton can't go.
And Hoyer had a lot of his own problems, you know, the self-inflicted wounds. But he didn't have a lot of help from Julian Edelman. And that brings me to, pop quiz. For PFF, Edelman has 15 drops, 15, since the start of last season, which is tied for most in the NFL with what NFC East wide receiver?
Ooh. NFC East wide receiver, huh?
NFC East wide receiver. This is a team that's throwing the ball all over the yard. They're scoring points. They can't stop anybody.
It's Amari Cooper? Is it that who it is?
No, you're close. Michael Gallup.
Michael Gallup, huh? That's interesting. Yeah, you know, listen, when I see guys like Michael Gallup or even, like, let's just say Julian Edelman, Odell Beckham Jr., he's good for a few of these drops every few weeks. You know, it's not – their hands are so good, they're too good at times. You know, their hands are so good that at times they forget the basics, which is like look at the ball in, right? Because they've become such machines and they catch 200 footballs a day and they can catch it with one hand or three fingers to when, oh, wait, I got two hands here and the ball's coming in perfectly? Let me look downfield to see where everybody is and I'll catch the ball because I don't even have to think about it. It's like riding a bike for them. That's really all it is. But, yeah, we've seen it happen with Mahomes. You know, I mean, Edelman, twice. I mean, he got lucky one time it ricocheted and they still caught it. But the next time it cost them, you know, any chance to be able to come back and have a chance to maybe tie or win the game.
That was a hugely anticipated game, gave us a lot of storylines and headlines. But before we officially move on, any final thoughts, Chiefs, Patriots, either side of the ball?
No, I don't think I got any of that. You know, I just that I would love to see this rematch, you know.
Yes.
And I really would with Cam Newton. That would be unbelievable. And, you know, I know a lot of people sit here and just go, well, if Cam Newton's playing, they win that game by 10 points, right? No. No, not – listen, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, the emotions of that game would have been different in pregame warmups if they saw Cam Newton out there and everything. I don't think they would have, like, taken it so lightly. Cam Newton would have added to the intensity of the football game. I think it would have added to the pressure on Mahomes and the offense to where they knew they would have to execute. You know, and let's not forget Kansas City didn't have Chris Jones either. I mean, he was definitely in the combo for one of the best defensive players in the game. So I would love to see it, too, just because both teams are chippy, and nobody gets a team to be more chippy than Cam Newton. He's the best at getting underneath the skin of defensive players that I've ever seen, maybe other than Phillip Rivers. And I would love to just see that element of that game. Man, I'm like, seriously, fingers crossed, mid-January, please play each other again.
Yeah, and the fun part, just as a fan, it's a hell of a rivalry. As much as we enjoy Mahomes throwing for 400 yards and making it look easy, it's great. And again, just as a fan, to watch when someone gives him a hard time. If we can get a healthy Cam Newton in there sometime in January, that'll be a lot of fun to watch. Okay, moving on. And I haven't hammered home the theme of the show that this is a Wednesday, what the fuck happened. So that's what happened.
Yes, that's what happened in Kansas City. In that game.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. In Detroit, Saints beat the Lions. And you know I'm going to cue this up. Drew Brees was pushing it downfield, not way downfield, just a little bit further downfield than what we got used to. Brees' percentage of passes 10 yards downfield. Weeks 1 through 3, only 23%. Week 4, a little over half, 52%. So what happened to this Saints offense?
Well, you know, I think two things that would jump out to me. I mean, definitely Drew Brees played really good. I think was a little more aggressive with his mindset. But I think the thing that set that up was I believe the Saints played to their biggest strength on their football team, which is their O-line and their run game. And that sets up nothing better to get more explosive plays or pass plays than to have a run game and the play action passes, as you know. That's why you're shaking your head, like, because you watched the game back and you went, damn, they ran the ball and beat the crap out of the Lions up front and controlled the clock and did all that, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And they get under center, which you have trained me to keep a close eye on. They do a terrific job of getting them under center, sometimes even an eye backfield, but a fullback type. But there are plenty of games afterward, Chris, where the numbers are kind of misleading and they can sell an argument that you really want to have. But to your point, I mean, Drew Brees is getting the attention, and he was very, very good. But the combination of Murray and Kamara, they had 33 carries. They had 37 touches. The offense started not just by a little bit, but the offense started with those two. And that's why, I mean, to me, Brees was able to push it a little bit further downfield.
I agreed. I mean, the first drive itself, right? And I'm sorry, my computer just locked me out, so I'm putting in my password here. But the first drive itself was a 12-play drive. And I believe it was a 12-play drive. Let me get my facts straight there. Yes,
second drive after I think his first pass was picked. But yeah,
You're right. It's the second drive.
Way in the rearview mirror, yeah.
13-play drive and 10 plays were runs. So, right. And then they had two passes downfield on that drive as well. So that's unbelievable. And I think to your point, that's exactly what they did. Hey, they got an unbelievable offensive line. They got three first rounders on their O-line. Andrews Pete didn't play. I understand that. But, you know, it's really good is my point. And I think between that and just doing that, Sean Payton self-scouted thyself. And he just said, wait, what am I doing here? Michael Thomas is not in. My quarterback's 41. Do I really think the passing game is going to be what carries us all year? Or is it all these damn big guys I've drafted early on in the draft and paid a lot of money to and this damn running back that I just paid $15 million to a year?
Right.
And I think he finally got back to his senses there and went, man, if my quarterback is struggling a little right now, there's nothing that's going to be better for him and make the game easier on him than me just running the ball. And, you know, I just think naturally, yeah, it helped in with the play action pass, got linebackers supped up. And for the most part, you saw a lot of those deep crosses and, you know, slot seven routes, corner routes that Brees really took advantage of.
And I really like the way he played too, but I think people might be getting a little too carried away with, oh, Brees can throw downfield now. He went from everything 10 yards and under to really exposing that intermediate 10 to 25 yard range. It wasn't like he was making the wow big push route kind of throws. He's the singles hitter who went from hitting it between third and short to hitting line drives all over the outfield, which I'm complimenting them for, but it wasn't like this big 180 they did. They just shifted a little bit and opened up, you know, that next level of the field.
I think that's the way to put it, though. I think you're right. They don't need to be like Bobby Bombs Away and throwing 50-yard balls in the air. And he's not that. You're right. But what we just don't want to see is a bunch of 5- and 6-yard throws right over the middle. If they just do like to what you're saying, have a number of 15- and 20-yard pass attempts and completions and concepts that way, I think with that, between the formula of running the ball – you know, it's going to make everything simpler for Drew Brees to see downfield. And, you know, I think really ultimately it's going to make them a more aggressive football team and a better football team instead of trying to look for 7 million different ways to throw the ball 4 yards. You know, you can live dangerously that way. Right. One tip ball, you know, a few incompletions and all of a sudden it's three and outs, and all of a sudden you're losing a football game to where I think really they're playing – to the strength of their football team at this point of Drew Brees' career and where they are with this team to get underneath the center. Like you said, we saw a lot of, you know, tailback, fullback, tight end, two receivers, like 21 personnel looks to where they just played smash mouth football and said, nah, I'm smart coach. I'll have some good run plays and we're just better than you up front. And I'm going to beat you that way and force you to stop that. And then you'll see Emmanuel Sanders going behind you and all that stuff. And I think that's really what stood out to me more than anything.
I want to get your response to this question, Chris, from at Jay Salowich 25. He says, was Drew Brees' ability to throw downfield a sign that he still has the goods when he needs it? Or is it just confirmation that Matt Patricia and the Lions are incompetent on defense?
Well, it's not the best defense in the world, but I think it's more, I would say, the Drew Brees thing. You know, I didn't look at Drew Brees' arm through the first 3 weeks and just go, oh, my gosh, it's so much worse than last year. Like, he can't do it. I just felt like there was a reluctance to do it. That was what I had said on our Monday podcast. Like, too many plays where he's setting up to throw that deep cross, and you're just like, man, throw it. Why didn't he throw it? And he just, for whatever reason, didn't pull the trigger or whatever it was. But I didn't see any of that hesitation in this game. And, you know, again, like we said, it doesn't need to be, like, way down the field. They just need a little bit to help out their run game, their screens, and some of those short passes will all open up if they can just continue to kind of hit those 15 to 20-yard passes.
Yeah, 13 yards per completion for Drew, easily the best he's had this season and above the average he's had in recent seasons.
I want to say one more thing, too, about it, Paul, just I thought, because you kind of brought it up, and I wrote this in my notes, but I felt like there was a little bit of a a Brady and Tampa Bay feel to what they did with Drew Brees. It's something I've been saying with Drew Brees or, you know, Brady and Tampa the last few weeks. But the one thing I noticed was, you know, when they got into the spread, right? All right, shotgun spread. It's going to be, okay, get the ball out of your hands quick, quick, quick. But then when they got into some of those traditional fullback, running back, high formation looks, you know, that's when they went to play action, max protect, let Drew feel comfortable so then maybe he can feel comfortable and confident in throwing that ball down the field and things like that. And I think that's always a really good way to kind of get a quarterback who may be struggling with throwing the ball downfield to get him to feel a little bit better about doing it. Hey, protect him up, you know, make the formation simple so it's just really clear to him down the field. It's an easy read. And then you build on it from there. And that, I think, was something that kind of jumped out to me about the game.
Did you see that fourth and short early when they used Kamara on the wheel routes? I mean, that was a terrific call and a wonderful throw.
A wonderful throw, right. And that's, you know, again, that was probably, what, a 15, 18-yard throw. But they do that, maybe not even, maybe 12. I don't even know what it is, but – brilliant play design once again. And yes, you see that, like, it wasn't like he was wide open.
No.
You know, so, but Brees dropped back with conviction and made the decision and just let it go. And if we see more of that, you know, this Saints offense will get rolling and they'll be one of the better teams in all of football.
Hey, thinking about an offense that's rolling, the Buffalo Bills keep showing up here. Bills against the Raiders in Las Vegas, and I don't even want to say that the maturation of Josh Allen, because it's like a level beyond that. It's like the evolvement into, hey, he's got potential to, hey, he's knocking on the door of the top five or six quarterbacks in the league and like starting to kind of walk into that conversation. So Bills Raiders, let's begin with Buffalo on offense against a struggling Raiders defense. What happened there as you saw it?
Yeah, well, the Raiders were definitely in a bind in this football game. You know, they don't have a pass rush. They can't stop the run. Their front's not very good. And because of that, they have a very good young secondary. But they put a lot of pressure on them, even though most of them are in their first and second year, just because it's really the only chance they have to win the football game is for those guys to kind of come through. Unfortunately, this is not the team that they're going to come through on right now. Not with this offense and weapons and the way they call the game. You know, I think that's the first thing. Brian Daboll is going to be in the head coaching conversation after this year. I mean, you see it, the formations, the movement, everything they're doing, and the plays themselves are always attacking. It's never like, hey, we're trying to set this up to get a 3-yard gain. It's like, we're trying to set this up to get 40 right here. And then the next play, we're doing something else to get 40 more. And I think that's really where they put a lot of pressure on you. And the one thing I just really, I mean, we talk about Allen and everything, but he just got a special blend of being a QB to me where, yeah, I'll do what I got to do and go through the reads and do what's coached. But also, when things don't break down, he doesn't panic. Some crazy coverage or he's confused. He kind of just still sits in there and then he just plays football. And he just, oh, let me find the open guy. He really is, you know, has made it very simple in his mind that way. Because sometimes where, you know, why I'm saying this is you could see quarterbacks who might get some crazy coverage or something. And they're panicked. Like, wait, coach didn't tell me what to do when they do this. What side or who am I supposed to be working? And then they're a chicken with their head cut off. He'll be like, oh, crazy coverage. And then he kind of sits there like, well, no big deal. And he's just very relaxed. And, oh, and then, oh, let me just, okay, I'll scramble around or I'll just wait until I see somebody open and I'll hit him in the chest. And,
right.
Hey, they're probably like, hey, Josh, what coverage do they play? I don't know. I just found the open guy that play. And, you know, but he sees the field so well, I guess, is what I'm very impressed by.
And his numbers across the board are so good. I mean, one of my favorite ones, I mean, we're through 4 games. You add up the Bills' losses and Josh Allen interceptions, and that number is 1. And that's the one pick he's thrown. And just like pushing the numbers aside, just the eyeball test, anybody who's over 70%, don't you kind of automatically go, yeah, but that's a lot, you know, they're checking it down. Coach is giving them a lot of easy reads. He's the rare guy who's over 70 and he's a risk taker. He's at that high efficiency rate while he's pushing the ball downfield and making tough throws he was missing last year. And I think just from watching him, that's the combo I like the most at this point is the efficiency with the fact that he's not taking the easy way out. He's still making difficult throws.
No doubt. I would argue that the balls he completing, you know, the degree of difficulty is the highest in football, you know, with what he has to do throw after throw after throw. Russell Wilson's probably in that conversation competing with him because they're kind of the same way. It's like, we're not going to give you any easy 5-yard completions. We're going to make it really close 50 yards down the field and we expect you to hit it. That's kind of what they do. And you're right. I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, it drives me crazy because people don't really want to give it credit yet. I mean, you know, I see analytics groups and all these things talking about, oh, Josh Allen's an anomaly. And, oh, he's playing really good football, but they have to shit on him 7 times before they say that comment. Like, it pisses me off where I just want to go, okay, so at what point are we going to give credit? Or I see people saying, he made the big jump this year. Yeah, he made a jump. He made a jump last year, too, though. Stop discrediting that. He was 20-6 last year, touchdown interceptions, and they went to the freaking playoffs. I know it wasn't perfect.
Right. But this, right.
this is different. I know.
It's different.
I know it's different. I watch highlight shows on Sunday night and Monday, and people still can't say it was good. Like, I saw a guy doing a highlights on one of the channels, I won't bring it up, where they were questioning his Cole Beasley touchdown pass. Well, he threw it a little high. Yeah, because he wasn't supposed to throw it there. It wasn't supposed to go there. It was a total like, whoa, read the play out. Wait, they busted this. Let me get it out of my hand. And it was still a good throw. So I just don't – there's this group that won't back off of what they said about him in the draft. And it's pissing me off. And they all need to self-scout themselves and look in the mirror and go, wait, am I just trying to be narcissistically never wrong? Or at some point am I going to evaluate it for what it is? And the guy is playing top 5 football, like you said. There's no doubt. Yeah, there's no doubt. You see, you got me going there. You got me pissed off. No,
that's okay. I mean, we all get kind of attached to the pre-draft evaluations, and some people have a hard time letting go. I totally hear you in what you're saying, that this isn't out of nowhere. He didn't do a 180. This is a really nice step up.
So right, but it's a big step. Said, I get that.
Yeah, and that being understood, where do you think he has taken the biggest step? Where has he grown the most to go from – a nice player last year to a really, really good one now?
Yeah, I think this is where what I wrote. I mean, first off, I know the human being a little bit. And the fact that I got to spend that day in Buffalo with him two off seasons ago, it made me more confident in the player because I saw the human and I went, this guy's got his shit together. He loves football. He's a natural born leader. And the team gravitated towards him and always wanted to come over and say hi to him, the coaches, everybody, when I was there. You know, that showed me he was like a leader of the football team already, and that was going into year two. So with that, I went, ooh, this guy's got it in him. Let's see if he can pull it off, but he's got it in him. But I wrote something here. I wrote, I mean, I knew he had talent, but his recognition has gone to another level. It's phenomenal. Blitzes don't get to him. He knows where to go with the ball. And if somebody is free, he kind of knows where that person is and he'll make a miss and then maybe by himself. But, you know, we're through 4 weeks with the gunslinger Josh Allen, right? The guy who threw a ball over his head in the wild card game last year, right? And you've already said this, but through 4 weeks, we have seen very few risky decisions. I mean, very. I mean, to a point where I go back in my head and just go, man, I can only think of like one play where that should have been an interception and it was dropped. And to me, it's he worked on some of the techniques and shortening his motion to become a little bit more accurate, especially on the intermediate touch throws. And then his ability to read and recognize the defense has gone way up to where I just think it's made him so comfortable. And that's why he's kicking ass right now.
Who's his best friend in this, in this, no matter how steep the leap is that you want to say he's taken this year, is it Brian Daboll? Is it Stephon Diggs? Is it the O-line?
Daboll, this is good. All right, so here we go. First off, I'm going to give Sean McDermott credit, first off, for never wavering on Josh Allen, never being over-coachy and trying to take all the good he has in his game and realizing, wait, there's good here. I'm not going to, like, handcuff this guy just because – he made a few mistakes. I think we could, you know, we can make this flourish into something special. So he deserves the first credit to have that patience and vision and know the guy and everything. Diggs took the offense over the top as far as how do you match up with them. He's a go-to guy to where he can beat anybody in football in man-to-man coverage. And even when he isn't open, he can catch the football. So that's made their offense really dangerous from a personnel standpoint. And Daboll's offense is awesome. I mean, it's awesome. It's one of my favorite offenses to watch in football right now.
How is it different than the others we see?
Yeah, right? I just think it's a ton of formations, a lot of movements, and it's ultra aggressive. They're basically doing, you know, how you and I talk about, like, you want to have a good offense, you got to make defenses defend the whole field. You know, they're doing it basically by aggressive passes, screens. Aggressive passes, screens. And it works. If you're going to call aggressive passes and have those receivers and Josh Allen, man, you're going to make defenses back up and, you know, you'll be able to capitalize. But then when teams get too worried about that, oh, he's got a great feel of when to call a wide receiver screen or a screen to Devin Singletary. And because of that, it really makes defenses, it puts them in a bind. Let alone knowing they have to kind of contain Josh Allen, too, who can scramble and do those things. So that's where they're really special right now.
Other side of this one, Derek Carr against the Bills defense. What happened there?
Well, they missed some opportunities. You know, again, I'll go back to what I say with Derek Carr. Derek Carr has talent. He shows it every week. You know, 2 weeks ago in New England, there were some plays where you go, man, Derek Carr, throw the ball deep. It's one-on-one. The guy's got him by a step. Would you damn do it? You know, this week, I didn't have any problems with any of that, really. I mean, I thought he made some good decisions, was pretty aggressive. But, like, two of the biggest moments of the game, you know, to me, the long, deep touchdown pass, wrong formation, right? I mean, how does that happen? You know, there was another – you know, we had a Darren Waller open on the right sideline at one point as they're getting down there. They're in the red zone. And they're getting close to the goal line. Like, he's open. You know, that's going to give you first and goal in the 3-yard line. And he misses that throw. And now they settle for a field goal. So, you know, they're leaving some of their best opportunities to get 7. You know, they're just missing out on it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And that's where I just come back to question, you know, Derek Carr at times. I know he's got the skill and the talent to do it.
Sure.
Just doesn't seem like they always capitalize on everything that's there to be had.
My take on Derek Carr on the offense, and I want to know if you think this is on or if you think I'm off a little bit. But if you broke down quarterbacks in the league into like four unofficial categories, awesome, good, average, and poor. What we saw in Las Vegas on Sunday was the difference between awesome and good. Josh Allen's having an MVP kind of year. Derek Carr's good. He's a good quarterback. They should be happy they have a good one instead of an average or poor one. But the other team had an awesome one, at least for now.
Yeah. That's the way to put it. You're exactly right. He's good. He might have the ability to be awesome. We haven't seen it. We see little inklings every now and then, but you're right. And because of that and their coach, I wonder if they'll stay patient with that. I do.
It's hard.
Because, you know, it's hard when you see, you know, you lose games to a Mahomes and you see a Josh Allen, and you just go, damn, what they bring to the table is just, it's almost indefensible at times. You can't stop it. But I agree with you. You can win football games with Derek Carr. There's no doubt. And, you know, I'm just looking through my notes just to make sure. But, you know, I did think he tried to be a little bit more aggressive. He does miss some throws every now and then because he doesn't step into throws. It does bother me. Like, he missed two throws that are wide open on the first drive of the game where I just want to go stand in there, step towards the target, and throw it. But he at times can get into that little, like, step into the bucket and just kind of do it with his arm like that. And it can lead to the ball being off target, you know, and that just, you know, he needs to be mechanically in the right way. He's not like a Josh Allen or a Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers where, you know, their feet can be in any way they want and they still can throw the ball anywhere they want. That would be the big thing. And let me just, you know, I think for the most part, though, you know, they missed those opportunities. The fact that they were missing some receivers too, that hurt their team. You know, they were a little undermatched, and I didn't come away though looking at Derek Carr and going, "Oh, he played bad football." I thought he played a good game. He just played another team that's playing really good right now and has a really hot offense.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history.
Leaves his calling card.
And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA, and Peacock.
Arizona offense was hot, Chris, a couple of weeks ago. They've slowed down quite a bit. The Cardinals lose to Carolina. Second loss in a row. I mean, that's concerning. But, I mean, this is a team that its offense is going to make it go. Kyler Murray is going to make it go. Two games in a row where it's less than 24 points in a season that's gotten to start with offenses scoring in the 30s and 40s. So what has happened the last 2 weeks to this Cardinals offense?
Yeah, well, all right. So last week against Detroit, or 2 weeks ago against Detroit, you know, their offense did okay. They moved the ball. That came down to Kyler Murray was just a little off his game. He missed two wide open receivers. That ended up having interceptions. you know. So, and he ended up throwing three in the game, but two of them were really his fault, to where you just go, man, he doesn't make that kind of throw or mistake very often. So I wasn't like sitting there going, I'm concerned about Arizona's offense. You know, I like Arizona's offense. Do I love it? No, but I like it. Carolina was all over this. I mean, from the get-go. And, you know, the one thing where I'm pissed off about picking the games last week that I didn't really think about, you know, their D coordinator, Phil Snow, he coached at Baylor. He's coached against the Oklahoma Texas Tech offense that is Cliff Kingsbury. So I think what he really did is he took away a lot of the staples of the offense. And what I mean by that is the wide receiver screen game and some of the short throws to the wide receivers, they became a mute point in this football game. He couldn't get some of those short receivers open. And in the screen game, yeah, they got the screen, but they only got like a yard. And where in other weeks they were ripping off 8 and 10 and 12 yards on those type of plays. And I think that was the biggest thing I saw that really threw a wrench in the offense altogether.
What's the lesson that other coordinators can take from that? I mean, schematically, of what he has that knowledge from the Big 12, he applied it to that game. What can others do to have that same success?
Well, I think, you know, one, they have guys on the edge of their defense who were really good at hustling sideline to stop those screens, right, and do that. That was a big thing that I – one of the things that jumped out to me. You know, let me just see. I just want to make sure I don't miss a point here. You know, the way – I guess I would say that – here we go. This is what I wanted to get into. They did a great job of, okay, Kyler Murray – the offense, a little bit like we talked about with New England defending the Patriots, where, yeah, screens, an occasional shot downfield. Oh, you got to play us man-to-man because we're throwing the ball quick. And if you play zone, Kyler Murray's going to find the zones and throw it away. And what they did is when they did that, they had people there for the crossers too, like we talked about with New England and against Kansas City. Same type of thing. So I think there was a few times where – Murray gets the ball and he thinks, oh, I'm going to hit the crosser here and we're going to get a gain. And as he's getting ready to look at it, he looks and it's like, oh, crap, there's a guy there waiting for it. I'm going to get him killed or I'm going to throw an interception. So I thought they did a really good job of taking that away. And like I said, the screens, the edge runs, the quarterback runs, they had people there eyeing Kyler Murray at all times. To where they didn't let him extend plays, overdo it on the pass rush. They didn't pass him up. And then they always had a guy in the middle of the defense kind of eyeing him just in case he did break the pocket. And I thought that was a real big part of slowing him down as well.
I know you like what Kingsbury is doing on offense down there. You're really excited about Kyler Murray. Looking at the last 2 weeks, we're giving credit to Carolina's defense here, but anything really concerning about what they've been doing on that side of the ball with Arizona these last two games?
Yeah, I just think they're becoming a little too predictable. Like, you know, they have all the basics and staples and things like that. I just think they got to give a few more looks. You know, just can't always be about the spread and always being in the shotgun and always doing that. You know, I know they've shown me moments of where they get underneath the center and I start to go, oh, wait, are they going to do this? Are they going to have some more plays here? And it's like, ah, they just went underneath center for a play just to, like, throw you off. And now it's shotgun for 10 plays. And I just have a feeling that teams are getting used to the route concepts very much to where, yeah, they got to be a little worried that way. And honestly, hey, Kyler Murray's got to play better too. I mean, you know, he did not play, you know, we talked about 2 weeks ago. He didn't play good again. He missed throws. Paul, I want you to check this out this week. You know, I'm always into the arm angle, right, and doing that. And, you know, everybody does it a different way. Man, Murray's arm in motion has gotten a lot longer to me the last 2 weeks. I mean, I saw moments of when I went, like, his arm is, like, straight like this. And I don't know how you make that work every throw, every play. And some of those throws that I did see, they were errant when he does that, to where I think he's got to rush to fix that. Another thing that really jumps out to me about just his play altogether He's got to learn to step up in the pocket. You know, that's a really big issue for him. He leaves completions down the middle of the field at times because he just refuses to step up. And I know he's a smaller guy, but I just think it's a dangerous way to play the way he's doing that right now. And when he does get sacks, it ends up being like a 12 or a 15-yard loss because he never steps up and kind of attacks the line of scrimmage. And those are things that he directly can affect himself.
I want to read one number to you, and it's Kyler Murray completed 24 passes for 133 yards. I think that's just a little bit better than 5 yards per completion. I mentioned earlier Drew Brees was at 13, the highest he's had all season in the win over the Lions. Do you think this is more him taking the conservative way out, or is the scheme right now asking him to throw all these short passes?
Yeah, it's the scheme. That is what I mean. It's got to be more aggressive. You know, they're in – like I said, I'll try to encompass it with like one kind of phrase here. It's, you know, like I just said, short pass, slant to Hopkins, slant, slant. Okay. Oh, screen behind the line of scrimmage. You run and get 8 yards. It keeps us in second and two. Now we can throw the short pass for the first down. Or if you get too aggressive, we'll just take that one-on-one shot down the field, right? That's kind of how they work. It's just not enough. It's not. It's not going to get it done that way. You saw a team take away the screens and the short passes and all over their crossing routes that they like to run. And there was nothing there for an answer for what else to do to around him, let alone I thought he was very affected by people around him in this game. I found him watching the pass rush a number of times, I thought, you know. And those are things that I thought, along with this too, you know, my bottom thing I wrote is Cards just not giving enough to think about on offense. Never a change in attack, and they waste plays. They do waste plays where I look at plays and go, New England or Kyle Shanahan would never run that play into that defense. They would never do it.
But you have a good example of that one?
I can't, and I should have written it down for a few times, and I don't know why I didn't, because you know my notes, and you usually right. usually I'll say a diagram yeah. or like they've done this too much, but I think that's something that jumps out to me at times too. Even in, like when they're in the shotgun and they run the ball, I just go, wait, I know like we're trying to run the ball to just give a little semblance of a run game, but this isn't a look to run it in. Don't run it now. Throw it into this one. There's just been things like that that I see. And, you know, I think all in all, just to wrap it up too, the Panthers didn't play a ton of man. But they were, like I said, aware of the scrambling in the pocket, aware of stopping crossers, and they played areas. And see, that to me is where I get into, ooh, there's got to be some tendencies in the Cliff Kingsbury's offense. Mm. There was just too many times where he dropped back, like we talk about last year all the time with Sean McDermott and the Buffalo Bills. He would drop back, and man – somehow, some way, Carolina's seven guys dropping in the zone coverage are in the perfect spots. And to me, that when I start to see that, I start to go, ooh, this defensive coach has a beat on the offense itself. And that's what it looked like to me as well.
It all leads me to think maybe it's only a four-game sample size. They are 2-2. They're not in trouble. But are you backing off your excitement of this team and this quarterback a little bit?
That scared me a little bit. It did. I can't lie. The last game, it definitely scared me. Where – I know, even after the loss against Detroit, I went, man, there's a lot I still like about Arizona. Defense is playing better, things like that. But, man, the defense got tore up in the game, and I didn't watch that coach's film. I just watched the TV cut, so I need to break that down a little bit more. But, yeah, that bothered me. And the way he's throwing the ball the last 2 weeks and how this defense locked the offense down a little bit, yeah, I'm a little more scared than I thought I would be after 4 weeks here with Arizona.
All right, one more game to get into with what happened here. Let's hit Colts and Bills, and I'll let you pick the direction, and then I'll drive you down one of those roads. Do you want to start with Nick Foles, or do you want to start with this Colts defense?
I got to start about the Colts defense because
what is going on? Gardner Minshew was 19 out of 20 against them, and then the three games since, I think they've given up 29 total points. What the hell are they doing on that side of the ball?
Yeah, right. I mean, I'll tell you what the fuck they're doing. They're really good. And, you know, even in that Gardner Minshew, you're right, was 19 to 20, but it was like only for 170 yards, right? You know, so, but I,
it was
I
mild.
Get your,
yeah,
you're right. Either way, he found ways to complete the ball and get completions and all that. All right, so this would be, here's the first thing I just, you know, I got to just say, it's the best defense in football. I'm done with it. I thought Pittsburgh might have been the best defense in football, but after the last, you know, I guess 2 out of 3 weeks where I've watched the Colts defensive film, I didn't put a lot of stock in them dominating the Jets 2 weeks ago. I wasn't, but the week before that, what they did against Minnesota and what I saw against the Bears, it's the best defense in football. It really is, for a lot of reasons. And Paul, they remind me of the 49ers from last year. They really do. It's the same feel and vibe I got. They don't ever have to blitz. Their front four can do it all the time. They can send waves of healthy bodies on the defensive line. Their linebackers are fast as hell. They play that Seattle scheme, but there's more wrinkles in this defense than the normal Seattle scheme, which you know I like because I think that can become predictable that way. But the secondary is better than what I thought it would be going into the year, and they don't put a ton of stress on them because their front four is fucking unreal. And yeah. DeForest Buckner, I would say, is the best defensive player in football so far from what I've seen. Like, if you made me vote after 4 weeks, I don't even know how many sacks he's got. They don't even have a lot of sacks as a team. I know I looked that up to go, it's only 10 sacks, but that just tells you where sacks are overrated because the quarterback's under
so
fucking duress every play when you drop back against the Indianapolis Colts.
So misleading. And there's so many places I want to take this. First of all, tie it together with what they did in Buffalo. It's okay to give up a first-round pick when that first-round player that you got in exchange is playing better than any rookie would. So that's number one.
Yep.
As long as we're talking Chris Ballard, well over half of those starters on defense are their own draft picks. So more credit to them for how they're building from homegrown talent. I want to back up to what you said about it's the Seattle scheme and there's wonderful personnel, but they have more wrinkles. They're doing different things. What did they do differently as for those wrinkles to make Nick Foles and the Bears offense? They didn't have a significant touchdown drive the whole game.
Yeah, no. I mean, they really, life was hard for Chicago. And, you know, I know we were going to sit here and break down Nick Foles, but, you know, the breakdown's real simple. He had no fucking chance. Yeah. None. It doesn't matter. It wasn't like I could sit here, and I know you watched it back, too, to where you went, oh, he's missing receivers, and people were open, and he had time. Like, no, it was a total asshole.
Just an ass kicking. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Complete.
Yes. Complete. And so it doesn't matter who was quarterback. We could bring back, you know, Fran Tarkenton, whoever. They weren't going to get a lot of yards or points on the board. But I think it's combination coverages. And I think you've seen the picture of my notes and stuff about what I wrote, because I did write a few of these down to where, you know, There's things they're doing, like, you know, for one case, the Bears got trips right to the one side. They got three receivers to one side. You know, there's Foles in the shotgun. He's got a back to his left and a receiver to his left. They were doing, like, we're going to play one-on-one with the receiver to the left and the running back and just play man-to-man. And then they were playing cover three to the other three wide receivers. So little combination coverage there that is not – like a norm for the Seattle defense. And then even like some ways of how they passed off people in some of their, you think it's going to be that three deep coverage or something like that, but oh, they're playing man, and the way they read the routes and kind of pass it off is very, you know, what do I want to, just not normal. That's what it is. There was a play down in the red zone where Foles tries to throw, there's three receivers to his left, and he tries to throw to the inside receiver on a corner route in the back of the end zone. But the slot receiver's DB came off of his guy to protect from that route, and now that slot receiver was running inside, and the guy that was responsible for covering the corner route, he stops because they've been taught, wait, there's a guy coming my way, I'll take him. And through our breakdowns, we know the other guy's going to go out, and we got a guy out there. So it was very smart, creative zone coverage calls and some combination man that I found to be just enough to to make things very fucking confusing
yes.
when that front four is coming at you like that.
It all goes back to the main point you've had with all these successful defenses, with confusing the quarterback. And I forget, Chris, if I was talking to you in the last couple of weeks or to Tony Dungy about this matchup zone kind of concept, but it's kind of basketball-ish what you're describing. And again, if you and I had this conversation already, I apologize, but this matchup zone concept, yeah. That's exactly what it sounds like.
It is. That's exactly what it is. And it was. It was you and me last Wednesday. We talked about it a little to where, you know, when we grew up, cover three zone was,
right.
you know, hey, you just drop in your area, right? And,
yeah.
you know, hopefully you're in the way of the play design and all those type of things. You know, the offenses just became too evolved, too good. The receivers became too good. The quarterbacks became too good at, you know, oh, this is a cover three. Hey, I got a little time. Move to that side just a little to get the whole of the zone. Boom, completion. So defenses got sick of that shit. And they said, no, if there's a guy near you while we're playing this zone coverage, match him. So he's in your area, and as long as he's in your area, you man him up. When he leaves this certain area, you let him go because we got another guy in the other area that's ready to match him up if he gets into that area. And that is exactly what it is. And it's really well taught by Eberflus there in Indianapolis, let alone, like you said, it's Chris Ballard extraordinaire team mm-hmm. building. That's why he's, mm-hmm. if not the best GM in football, one of the best. He had a vision for what he wanted. He got a coaching staff that told him, hey, I want these type of players for our defense. And he knows how to execute that vision. And they're like the culture of the team, like I would just say, watch out for. Just
yeah.
I say Tampa's that team in the NFC and the Colts are that team in the AFC because Phillip Rivers, I think, has realized, whoa, this team's good around me. He's reining it in and not doing stupid shit. They got a good offense. They can run the ball. And like I said, the more and more I go through it here, I just go, man, they're reminding me of the 49ers, and I'm really impressed with the Colts as a whole.
It's a fun point to think about because one of the reasons Phillip Rivers has been so much fun to watch because he always takes risks. He throws some interceptions he shouldn't have, but that was how he played. And we'll see if he can back off of that in his late 30s and change his style a bit because that defense is that good. Before we go to quarterback jeopardy, it sounds like I know the answers to this, but I'm hearing these narratives out there so much. I want to see if we can put these behind us. Number one, the Colts defense and the fact that they're number one across the board in all the significant stat categories is only good or only looks that good because they played the Jets, Vikings, and the Bears. Is that, can we debunk that?
Debunk it. It's debunk, you know. Yeah. I got no doubt. When they get to the tough part of their schedule,
yep.
they're going to be still considered one of the best defenses in football.
Okay. Yep.
Yes. You know, whether they're number one or not, I don't know. We'll see. But I feel very confident in putting my name to this is going to be a top five defense when the year's all said and done.
Right. It's only four games, but they're number one in the categories that matter most by a significant margin. It's not even close. Number two, for all those disappointed in the Bears, Nick Foles is in the answer. See, he's not that good anyway. Should you sound that alarm after this game?
No, this was not the game to start that on. They have no chance. And when you can't pass protect and don't have a run game against a defense like the Colts right now, I just don't care who plays quarterback. That's where we got to get over this as a society, as football fans, and stop just boiling it down to one guy. It's so much more than that. You put Patrick Mahomes on the Bears last week, they're still going to lose that game. I'm sorry. That's the way it is.
Big statement.
That's at least the way I see it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They could have had him too, by the way. Should we rub salt in that one?
Oh, they know. Don't worry.
All right, buddy. Quarterback Jeopardy. Are you ready?
Always
still,
ready.
Still what? Firing I'm on so all cylinders. And...
Yeah, I'm going to put the other ear pod in just in case because I know I'm getting low here.
Okay, very good. Okay, so I try to do something, and Pete does as well, something we can do this week that we couldn't have done last week or the next week. So this is Quarterback Jeopardy with the quarter, Chris, the quarter in all caps because we're four games into the season. So we're going to cue the quarter season version of Quarterback Jeopardy. All the questions have to do with the topic of starting quarterbacks, and they all incorporate the number four since we are four games in.
Okay, cool, all right. I like it. Okay. I'm nervous as usual. I'm sitting here going, why didn't I look at, you know, some of the quarterback stats here before this damn podcast came just to get myself ready?
Not horribly stat heavy, just kind of stat sprinkled. So okay. We want to start you out with a completion. We want it to be second down and five, you know. So for 100 points, he was a fourth round pick. He wears number 4.
Dak Prescott.
His team's. Do you have the key to the answers down there?
Well, when you said fourth round pick, you know, that he registers pretty quick in your brain there's not a lot of fourth round picks starting a quarterback in football.
Aren't too many. Okay, so yeah, easy.
I'll sprinting. Take it. You need to throw a screen pass as a quarterback every now and then to get that completion in the quarterback rating.
For 200, speaking of the fourth round, what former fourth round quarterback threw his first career touchdown pass in week 3?
Ooh. He threw it in week 3 or week 4? Did he read it?
Pardon me. He threw it this past weekend. He threw it this past in the slate of games. That's a
Jared Stidham.
In week 4. There you go. 2 for 2. Jared
Stidham,
first TD pass.
That's why when you said week 3, I was like, wait, what? But, and oddly enough, Stidham wears 4, too. That's even funnier.
Should have included that one in there. And you even caught an error. So you have both correct, and you caught a syntax error there. It was week 4 instead of week 3. Okay, for 300. This QB is on his fourth team. His team won half of their 4 games. He's thrown a total of 4 touchdown passes. Name him.
Ooh, wait, he's on his fourth team.
The quarterback is on his fourth team. His team has won half of their 4 games, and he has thrown 4 touchdown passes this season.
Wow. All right, I'm Teddy Bridgewater.
There you go. You are on it today. That was just a guess.
Baby. Yep. All I got in front of me, too, just so you know, I got like the teams right there.
And it's so far away. I know you can't read it. did somebody else come to mind? Was there another option there?
No, I just got lucky that when I looked at the teams and I saw Carolina, I went, ooh, Carolina, Bridgewater, ooh, it might be him. There we go.
All right, 3 for 3, 400. Fourth-year quarterbacks have been in the headlines. Mitchell Trubisky got benched. Deshaun Watson is 0-4. Patrick Mahomes is 4-0. There's now a fourth quarterback of note from the class of 2017 who might start on Sunday. What's his name?
Hold on a second here. Look at this. I'm going to mess up the easiest damn question of this.
While you're thinking, I'll read it again. Fourth-year quarterbacks in the headlines. Trubisky got benched. Watson is 0-4. Mahomes is 4-0. A fourth quarterback is of notes from this class who might start on Sunday. What's his name?
What the hell am I? Who am I missing here? What the hell is going? Oh, CJ Beathard?
Yes.
Woo!
Yes.
I got lucky there.
I was going to have to point to bring the Tiger Hawk in a little bit closer for you.
He better be starting this week. I tell you, he better. I'm going to have to call my friend Kyle Shanahan. If he starts Nick Mullins, I'm going to be like, what the hell are you doing? Are you kidding me?
It's hard to put that genie back in the bottle, what he did there at the end and what the other guy did the rest of the game. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I don't know if you've been 4 for 4 at this point, the QB Jeopardy. Pete, you still with us?
Maybe one other time.
4 for 4? Okay. I'm going to warn you that this is really tough. Number 5 is really hard. Okay.
Good.
So I don't want you to feel bad about going 4 out of 5.
All right.
Okay. We know who will start for the Niners opponent on Sunday, Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Dolphins are his 8th team. Which team was his 4th?
Oh, that's a good one. That's great. I love it.
Feel free to think out loud here with us.
Yeah. I mean, all right. So, early on in his career, I mean, it's, you know, Buffalo. He was in Houston. St. Louis is first, right, which, I forget about that. I'm going to say Houston. Was Houston his 4th team?
You're close. It was Tennessee.
Ah, damn.
Tennessee. One season.
Wait, name the 8 teams he played for. Do you have it there? Because
I don't, I, but I – I think I have it in my head. It's St. Louis number one, who played for Mike Martz.
Right.
Was it Cincinnati, then Buffalo?
I think it was Cincinnati, then Buffalo, yes.
Okay.
Then Tennessee. Then Houston, I guess.
Hold on a sec. The Jets are in there somewhere.
Oh. He went from Buffalo to the Jets. No, right? Didn't he go from Buffalo to the Jets? So here, I got a text right here because, you know, our man Pete Demolitolitis is listening.
Yes.
He's got it. He'll tell us. St. Louis, Cincinnati, Buffalo, Tennessee, Houston, then the Jets.
Then the Jets.
Then the Bucks, and, of course, now Miami Dolphins. So good job, Pete D. All right, that was a good one, though. See, that was like a hard fifth one, but not like insane.
Not impossible. Yeah, you had a chance. Right. You were right there. You were in the neighborhood.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'll take 80% completion percentage to start it out. That's okay. I'm good.
You'd be number one in the league if that was the case.
Yeah. I would. Yeah. Damn, we did it.
That's it. Yeah.
You good? You got anything else?
Never
you
been
talk
five
about?
For five. Pete's letting me know. You've never been five for five. So that's something to work for.
Yeah, thank you very much. I know. Yes, I am working on that. What's up? What are you going to do the rest of the week?
Rest of the week, we have I'm calling Notre Dame on Saturday. Hopefully that game continues against Florida State. I continue to move into the new house here, Chris. You know, this is I dug this stuff out of boxes, a little Tour de France stuff, some Iowa memorabilia, and keep getting settled in here. It's not so bad. Yeah,
right,
how about
you?
Football, nothing but football.
Nothing but football. But, you know, Thursday's my Friday, and that's when I'll get into, you know, retox and detox and have a fun few days. I've had so much shit going on here. I'm just hoping I can have a normal weekend where I don't have to, you know, have family or a friend here or something, just where I can just kind of sit on the couch and do nothing. I need one of those weekends.
Don't have one of these national brands coming in and shooting a commercial at your house. I mean, just something nice and easy, right?
You're funny. Yes, yes. Very funny. Yes. Speaking of my Lowe's commercial. Yes. Yep. No, none of that. I don't want to deal with any of that. It's just, it's so hard being famous. I just can't take it anywhere. You the man, Pauly B. Good podcast
today.
Good
to see you.
Good questions. Way to go. Way to drive the ship. Just like an Iowa Hawkeye quarterback would do. Well, he really
there
well
we go.
Executed. Yep. Go Hawkeye.
Right up here. Yep.
Yep. That's
starting
a beautiful
couple
helmet.
Weeks.
Yeah. I love that helmet. Classic.
Yeah. Ancient. It's a classic. It's ancient. Yeah.
All right. Peace out. We're done. I can't talk anymore. I'm talked out for football. Paul Burmeister, Chris Sims. We'll be back next week. Paul, I know you'll either be back Monday or for the Wednesday. What the fuck happened?
Whatever you say, I'll be there.
We'll figure it out. But you the man. And everybody be good out there. Be safe. Do the right thing. Help the world. Help the country. And enjoy football, most importantly, on Sunday. Peace. See ya. See ya, Pauly B.
See you, man.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.